Hello, everybody. Mark Carlson here, SNEA Technical Council Chair. Welcome to the STC Podcast. Every week, the STC Podcast presents important technical topics to the developer community. Each episode is hand-selected by the SNEA Technical Council from the presentations at our annual Storage Developer Conference. The link to the slides is available in the show notes at snea.org/podcast. You are listening to STC Podcast Episode 28. Today we hear from Jean-François Smigielski, co-founder and R&D manager, OpenIO, as he presents new fresh open source object storage from the 2016 Storage Developer Conference.
Nice to meet you. I'm Jean-François Smigielski. I'm a co-founder of OpenIO, a French startup that provides an object storage nearly completely open source and based in France. I'm here to present the solution, how we made it, what was the starting point, how we developed it, and what are the current developments. So let's start with a little history of the company. The first idea started in 2006 when we had too many data to store and manage. This was in the context of hosting a lot of emails for French internet service providers. The development started in 2007, entered in production in a short period after. In 2009, we had 1 petabyte stored. The solution has been open sourced in 2012. The stored capacity raised to 15 petabytes in 2014, and then we forked OpenIO around the project 1 year ago. We are mainly present in Lille, north of France, for the people that know it here. We also have a presence in Tokyo, San Francisco, Montreal, and Madrid. And feel free to contact us if you want a representative to be met at this point. What we did, that solution has been used to manage, I said, 15 petabytes for 60 million end users. In other words, all the French people with their emails from the ISP, with quite strong SLAs around 100 milliseconds to get 1 megabyte of data for everyone in the same time. So that's quite strong. The whole platform served in plus out approximately 50 gigabits per second of stream. This is quite an intensive usage for what has been designed to be cold storage. And this has been used for emails and the consumer clouds, all the videos, archives, photos, contacts, and pictures from the galleries that all the people have. How did we come to make a company, a software-defined solution for object storage? I will try to describe step by step all the ideas in the process. The first one is the pain, the initial pain we had. We had too much data. The forecast for the growth showed an acceleration that should not stop. The data was stored in silos, sharded, so inducing migration between the silos and so on, was operated by too many people. In other words, it cost too much, far too much for storing and managing the data. So it was time to learn and reboot the solution to make something different. The first thing we made was just considering that we were serving applications that consumed the data in a way that was not friendly with the storage because of a lasagna of a huge stack of interfaces. And then for sometimes each interface working like a black box. I'm sorry for my English, but I'm not a native, so I sometimes need time to find my words. So. It appears quite clearly that it was necessary to have a storage solution that was aware of the application, that give all the keys to the application to be used, managed in a pragmatic way, and then providing more an API, a software development kit, than something like POSIX and so on to access the data. The second thing we noticed is that the data had not the same characteristic about the I/O consumption. There was a lot of small files that did all the I/O operation that were modified nearly all the time. That's typically from the index around the data. And on the other way, there are huge files, quite immutable or at least not often modified, that consume most of the capacity, nearly 90%, but nearly never was the cause of nearly zero I/O. That's typically of the emails from the mailboxes. So it was obvious at this point that collocating both data, all the data on the same storage, on the same devices, was the poorest idea we could have. So there is an indication, a clue that separating both data on separated devices should be a good idea. Second time, the consideration we had is that I'm sorry for the colors, it do not render as expected. We do not like provisioning a whole platform at once. So we like starting small, growing when necessary, and growing without limit if possible, and even recycle hardware, but deliver continuously. I do not want to set up a platform for 10 petabytes at a moment, and because I know I will need 10 petabytes just in 5 years. I prefer adding 1 petabyte when necessary, gigabyte and terabyte and so on. So we should be able to manage uninterrupted deliveries on a weekly basis. That just-in-time investment has a problem, is that it brings heterogeneity to the platform. When you update the platform continuously, the hardware changes, because the new hardware has better characteristics, is more capable. You may recycle hardware. For example, you decommission hardware from another part of the platform, then you can reuse it into your platform without spending any money to buy it and so on. You might sign new vendor deals, bringing new hardware with different capacity, better latency, less capacity, better bandwidth, I don't know. So you have to manage heterogeneity, and more, and still more, you need to get ready to adapt to the versatility of the platform. And that's something we had in mind when designing the solution. The third point is that we manage humans. The humans act, at least in France, we are just in one time slice, all at the same time. They read their emails during the timeout of the job, at noon when the work stops, and just before the movie at night. So you have well-identified time slots during the day where all the bandwidth and the I/O capacity must be available to the users, and on the other part of the time, where the platform is available to admins to operate it. So we had in mind the goal of flexibility for the platform, in the meaning that it should be, if you want to make it, to build it just enough for the users, make it available for operation in a specific times. You should not have to, for example, rebalance your data during 1 week during the whole day. Typically, you have to be able to stop this during the peak hours. You manage with humans, but you serve them. That's the fourth point. The user experience matters. You have to stay in a quite short latency. This is not extremely short. This is something that has been quite difficult to achieve, but we made this. About 20 milliseconds to get the first byte of the data, 100 to, in the average, to retrieve 1 megabyte of data. You have to do this for 100 millions of users that can all have up to 1 million contents in each mailbox. This is typical. Also, the humans act together at the same hour. They tend to use only the recent data, and they tend to ignore the data that is bigger. They also have buzz effects. They all consume the same data at the same time, typical for videos and so on. So you have clues that caches and multiple tiers will be interesting here, because data unused, slow tiers, and data that is more hot sent on caches and hotter tiers. So with this point in mind, we design our architecture. First, the double hump showed that splitting hot and cold, and even in more than just one split, but being able to split it and offloading deeper the data that is colder. We should do this on independent low-cost drives to avoid high-end storage and appliance racks and so on, just a bunch of disks, and provide the software glue to aggregate them. The idea to aggregate that we had at one point, but we quite immediately decided to avoid, was to use consistent hashing to place the data, just because of the rebalancing that happens each time you want to scale up your platform and each time you want to decommission hardware from it. When you have to move the data, and we've seen you cannot do this when you want, if you want to scale up the data on a weekly basis, you cannot rebalance all the time. So if you want to do this, do the scaling up smoothly, avoid the consistent hashing. So if you can't do this, you have to do another way. And what we proposed and achieved is, instead of knowing, is choosing and remembering. The choosing part of the ID is using a software we call the conscience. I won't elaborate a lot of it. It is completely essential in the solution, but it is really simple. And the conscience is responsible to choose the best nodes to place the data. And the remembering part of the solution is just used by directories, regular lookup problem for something we know in computer science. So the conscience responsible to choose the nodes, in fact, is quite a hub, quite like a hub. It distributes the decently recent snapshot of the platform to the other nodes, so that the nodes that need to pull services for a task discover the peers, qualify them, giving a score, taking into account all the internal characteristics of each services, and be able to perform a load balancing based on the score given to each service. The directories responsible to remember the location for the 10 power 14 content is something quite difficult to be managed at a whole, but can be divided into trivial problems when you break the naming of the objects at one point. And that's what we did with the naming in direction of the container, so that we will associate one container per user. We will have 100 million of containers, something a directory can manage. And in each container points to the contents of that user. So that's a two-level directory. And let's see a little bit in detail how works each of the layers. The first one, top-level directory, is the directory of services. It is layered as a hash table. As you know, there is a first the hash table that is divided into 60k blocks, and each of the blocks is sharded on a plain SQLite file that can be replicated several times. You decide when you deploy the platform. We regularly use free replicas so that you can lose one node and rebuild it and cope with one failure. And the big advantage with this is that that directory is highly static. You do not move containers. Because the data is not so big, containers, 100 million is not a data that is completely huge. You can easily provision it at the beginning of the platform. So you can keep it in cache quite easily in all the clients. The second level really gives you the object view of the storage. Put, get, delete, listing, paginating, and so on. It manages versions on the contents, hard links to be efficient on copies, renames, and so on. It manages properties associated to contents. It generates notifications that let you trigger asynchronous management on the data you deployed when the content is put. What can I do with it? Save it, move it, delete it, I don't know, whatever you want. We give the key to the application to do what it needs. And the directory itself, each directory, each container is managed also with a single plain SQLite file that is also replicated. And using exactly the same technology and is also backupped with backlinks. Each content point by the directory also holds the back pointer to the directory so that we can rebuild the whole directory layer without any replica. And it's really helpful. With such an architecture, we have to design software development kits. For obviously, we need to provide APIs. We are a software solution. Managing the whole the complexity of the directory is not really is not the best way to do it. It's not to re-implement it each time you have to do another SDK. So we manage that task in a proxy that all SDK access through HTTP and JSON, something that is quite regular for RPCs. And the data transfers to the storage is managed by the proxy for the data. And all the complicated tasks are done in that data. For example, managing the Azure coding to manage the durability of the data and protect against data losses, replications, everything is made in the proxy. The big advantage of such proxies is to simplify the client code, the SDK code, and manage the complicated tasks such as caching, load balancing. When your data is replicated, you might easily choose the best node to serve it. When you have three copies, just choose the copy that is the least loaded at the moment. Proxies are nice, but sometimes the latency matters really, so that's all the piece of code that manage all the data transfers in the SDK has been insulated into a piece of code that is made available in some SDK, typically C, when you cannot afford the latency going through going through a gateway, going through a proxy. That can be a bottleneck, sorry. So we provide in open source several software development kits. Python, that is the first class, the first citizen of the APIs. C, that is used, we will see just later, in emailing application, and Java, because it is the most appealing. As interfaces, network interfaces, we provide de facto standard Amazon S3, because when you provide object storage, you cannot do another way than providing it. And Swift also, because de facto standard. On top of the open source solution, we provide what we call specific editions that target markets, big parts of the market, typically emails. We have a connector into Cyrus the free, that is maybe still in beta, so you won't find this in Cyrus.5, for example. Dovecot, that is being developed, but you will need currently the Dovecot Pro, and Zimbra, that is developed by Synacore itself. We provide an edition for media markets with tailor-made HTTP gateways that let you stream the data according to standards of the market, and file system extension that let you mount the object storage as a fuse connector, exposing it in NFS, Samba, or whatever you want that can be on top of fuse. Oh, that's it. Oh, sorry for the fuzzy effect. We talk about flexibility a lot. We have a big advantage is that we have pointers everywhere. We have a directory of users where there are pointers to the containers, directory of contents in each container. that's easy to place what you want behind the pointer, what is pointed to. So the general solution we found in, for the flexibility requirements, what we call is what we call a storage policy, is the combination between the storage pool and the data protection function. The storage pool gives you the where you store the data, and the data protection how you store it. This is quite simple, but it means everything. The storage pool gives you the ability to perform fine load balancing based on tags set on the services. And fine because it lets you define fallbacks, distance constraints between the services. Typically, I want one copy in America, two copy in Europe, and if I do not find an available service in Europe, put the second copy in America, for example. So this opens completely the door to geographical distribution. Oh. The data protection, what I put behind this is how do you secure the data? Do you erasure code it, 6 plus 3, 6 plus 4? Do you just want a free copies replication, or do you want just single copy because you can manage the protection with the hardware? This is something that is totally configurable in the solution, in fact. When do you apply the storage policy? When you upload the data for the first time? It is configured for the content. It can be specified. If not, you have a default value for the container, and if not, for the whole account, so that all the end users can manage the same, can benefit the same storage policy. You can also change it, enforce it during asynchronously triggered processing on the data, triggered by the notifications that are emitted by the containers. And why do you change the storage policy? But we are actively developing currently, we call this a dynamic storage policy, so that you can say if the MIME type of the data is just a PDF, for example, that do not contain the SDC 2016 on the title, send it on the cold storage because it won't be used in the short term. If this is a .html file, so keep it in the local, in the hot storage, as an example. The benefits we had implementing this is that the ability to partition nearly everything, the users in classes, gold user that pay more, regular users, and so on. Also the platform with high-end storage, low-end, big capacity, small capacity, but low latency, and so on, and do the matchmaking between both, so that you have all the good quality of services elements with such a feature. And if you have the elements, the door is also open to TCO reduction and cost optimization, because you put just what is necessary to serve the right users. We are able to tier on several hardware, but we have pointers, and it was nearly the next step, the obvious next step, to point to something that is not on your platform on-premise and put this on a public cloud. Why would you do this? We consider the public tier as a really slow but an active tape. Let's say this this way, something well suited for ultra cold data, and you can benefit from the low cost of the low storage cost of the data. How do we do this? If you have a tier, the simplest way to do this is to dedicate a storage policy to them. So you say the pool is the public tier, the data security typically for such a tier is a single storage because the tier manage the data security itself. You just have to embed the connector into the proxy. You can notice that it doesn't change anything in the client application. We do not feel the need to give direct access to the public cloud just because it is, I will say, slow by nature, but because you do not have the same connectivity to the public cloud than on-premise, so no real need to access it directly. And it really benefits from the asynchronism introduced by the triggers, just because you do not want to hang the end user on typically the deletion of the file. You can do this later, no problem with that. And just say it, that's okay, the file has been deleted. And because you do not have the bandwidth to absorb the peaks of the loads. Yes?
So typically tiering is done between different kinds of media so that you can achieve performance gains. But if you are doing tiering from one public cloud to another, how do you, what criteria do you use to pick your, you know, tiering peer, for lack of a better word? Everything is in cloud, no matter why.
This is a case we did not have yet, but that's something you configure in the. We are used to say we do not know better than the operators what is good for him. I do not know what is the trigger for him to move the data from one tier to another. I mean, he knows better that it has to move data from one point to another because it is cheaper, and he is ready to accept the cost of transfer from one to the other. I mean, that's something he knows. I cannot know this for him. The application doesn't know the price of the transfer, for example. That's something you have to configure.
So when you talk about cheaper, you're talking cheaper in terms of bandwidth, in terms of cost, or what?
That's how you configure the application. I mean, how will I say this? When I describe the dynamic storage policies, you describe the rules. When you crawl the data on the platform, you meet a file, then you see the metadata, the characteristics, and then decide to do something on it. If you configure the crawler with a logic that decides to move the data from one peer to another, that you made the choice, you made the cost evaluation by yourself. That's how we. This is not automatic. It doesn't manage the price. It gives you the key to configure it according to the price you know. But it doesn't learn, hey, Google Cloud Platform, Cloud Storage exists. Oh, it's cheaper, so I decide to move. The operator has to manage this. So no big change in the client application. This has been really easy to do, just with the help of the proxy toward the data. We had a first partner doing this. We now propose, because we already embed the connector, to offload the data to Backblaze as a cold storage, something that has been developed typically in June and is already available in the open source part of the solution. You deploy OpenIO, you want to offload on Backblaze your ultra cold data, configure this in the storage policy and let the crawler do, and the data will be sent on Backblaze as soon as the bandwidth authorizes it. We can do still deeper in the description. I see some people saying, no. We can still go deeper in the description. Still, we have too much hardware, and the hardware introduce complexities, sysadmin to be managed, and so on. All the layers brings bugs and latencies. The host can fail, have too few memory, and so on. Could we just drop this and provide disk immediately available over the network? There is a big opportunity in the moment, and there is a plugfest happening right now on the ground level, the kinetic opportunity brought by Seagate providing directly exposed to the network connected drives. You access to the data without the necessity to mount it on a host. The network interface doesn't provide you SATA or whatever. Now you just put get list keys in a sorted set, to be short. For us, this is the perfect tier for us. So we introduce the kinetic drive into the data client. Here we fail the necessity to provide direct access, but the proxied way is also available in the solution. because we share exactly the same vision between what wants to provide SIGET and what we want to do, reducing the complexity, reducing the cost, and give more ease to the gathering of a huge bunch of disks. So this is something we are currently including. I invite you to meet us, both all the Kinectic group that is present in the Sonoma room tomorrow, and meet us at the breakfast that is currently running on the ground level. And I'm about to finish. Really, I've been just a bit quick. I talk about storage. I talk about storage, but that's not everything that the application wants about the to do with the data. The application often wants to process the data, and if possible, in a place that is co-located on the data, because transfer costs. The application, for example, wants to handle metadata around the data. Typically, my data is shared with someone to store the links between them. I want to perform full text search and so on. That's something we propose on OpenIO, because when you store and if you recycle that hardware, the data is stored on a hardware that is sometimes oversized for just storage, so you have available CPUs, RAM capacity, and so on. So we provide what we call a grid for apps, something useful to deploy the task close to the data. But this is quite out of the scope from the current conference. We are here to talk about storage. And I will be glad to talk to you a bit more about this. And I invite you to speak about this at the, for example, at the breakfast that will be held on the Sonoma room. I've been a bit quick, so I'm done right now. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer them, and invite you to visit the website that we are feeding regularly.
Was the proxyless storage based on Kinetic only, or was it based on some underlying layer that you put on raw disk?
We are using in our proxy the protocol that is provided by the Kinectic group. So we developed the connector as we did for Backblaze. Backblaze, this is an HTTP connector with authentication and so on. With Kinectic, that's quite the same. They provide the Google protocol buffers description, and we implemented it.
But in your case, direct means Kinetic.
Toward Kinetic, we are directing access, no proxy.
Yes, but nothing, only Kinetic is the target.
No. I will just come back a few slides before. The first solution, I started with this, and because this is the easier way to present the solution. But the first time we developed the solution, all the application accessed directly the data immediately. Software library directly contacts all the drives. But this is the default case for the C API, for example.
And the drive had a Linux file system.
Linux file system exposed with the HTTP something like WebDAV.
Okay.
A restricted set from the WebDAV operations. Put, get, delete, and...
Okay, that clarifies.
Yes. And every object stored on the OpenIO software-defined storage is a regular file. Because I mentioned the SQLite that is used for all the directories. We replicate it by ourselves. All the files are plain files on file systems. And I know there was a presentation just before talking about the removal of the file system on the architecture. There are probably good reasons to do this, but in our history, it has been a good help to keep the file system, just because you have all the tools that an admin can handle. You have we play with the extended attributes, so it has all the operation to set, get, and so on. You have all the... Sorry?
It's a different use case than us.
Yes. But we were really happy to have them. Ah. So that's it. Noto. So, I won't keep you in the closed room for longer if you don't have any question. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. I hope that it was interesting. And
thanks for listening. If you have questions about the material presented in this podcast, be sure and join our developers mailing list by sending an email to developers-subscribe@snea.org. Here you can ask questions and discuss this topic further with your peers in the developer community. For additional information about the Storage Developer Conference, visit storagedeveloper.org.